What's going on, everybody? What's going on, y'all? It is Jamil Jude. Welcome to True Colors Podcast, episode number 10. We did it. We made it to 10 episodes. Thank you guys very much for tuning in with us every Thursday at 1 p.m. It means so much. It's been an amazing way to stay connected to you all during this pandemic and while we're on this intermission from producing and joining together in real life. We still have an opportunity to connect with one another virtually. So thank you all so very much for rocking with us. Today's guest was set to be Miss Pearl Clegg. Unfortunately, the devil is busy and her internet was not working the way we wanted it to. So we're still gonna rock with you guys. For those of you all who came here to see Miss Pearl Clegg drop some gems, just know we're gonna invite her back to the podcast looking at June 11th. But today, inspired by the great griot that is Miss Pearl Clegg, I want an opportunity to talk a little bit about new play dramaturgy. I have been involved with a couple of different new play development processes over the last several weeks, especially as we've all been, you know, quarantined and away from each other. It's been a really great time for playwrights to dig into their work, what they've been interested in, what they've been writing. So I want an opportunity to talk to the playwrights here, aspiring playwrights, mid-career playwrights, wherever you find yourself, or dramaturgs. If you're a director, I think this is also helpful too. I just want to spend a little bit of time talking through some ideas and thoughts around new play dramaturgy. And I hope that that holds your attention and can fill in a little bit of the small void that we have without Miss Pearl Clegg. So, without further ado, if you have any questions, go ahead and drop them in the, this is me pointing down to the comment section, drop them. Thank you very much. And for all those of you all who donate to True Colors, thank you guys so much for doing that. We really appreciate you using the podcast as a fundraiser. Just know that when you are online on truecolorstheater.org, you can also use our Power to Give, which is what we're doing in partnership with the City of Atlanta, to double your gifts. So anyway, let's get into this. Let's get into new play dramaturgy. All right, I am an alliterative person. I love alliteration. My name is Jamil Jude, so I think I kind of got it naturally. But I also think it really helps me memorize things. So I want to give you guys Jamil Jude's alliterative attack to new play dramaturgy. We're going to talk about a couple things. One, we're going to talk about story structure. And we're going to talk a little bit about what are the singular story points, what are things that once you hit it one time, we don't really have to go back to in your plays. Then we'll talk about the things that are cyclical. What are things that you want to have reoccurring in your story? And then we'll end it with just what I call critical composition concepts. Again, alliteration. So if you don't like alliteration, this is not the new play dramaturgy talk for you. But I am a huge fan of it, and I hope that it helps you with your memorization, okay? So let's start with those singular story sections, all right? The things that you wanna put in your play that once you hit it, we're good, we help establish the stasis, we establish our norm for the play. And the first being expository elements, and that's the exposition. Hey, hello to you too, Shanti Sakina. When you start the play, it's the exposition, it's the setting, it's the things that we need to know. Give us the given circumstances. That's time, setting. What information does the audience need to have in order to get into the play? We don't want to take a lot of time with it, right? Especially with the way people are writing new plays now. Some of them are one act, some of them are like 90 minutes or what have you. We don't want to spend a lot of time that we have with the audience. It's a precious thing. We are asking the audience to come be with us, gather with us, and we don't want to waste our time. So when your exposition, let's get to it. Let's get to it quickly. Can we be convincing? Can we be economical in the way that we share our exposition? Can it be through character dialogue in a real way? Let's try to refrain from a character saying, well, my name's Jim and I'm from Oklahoma. Or, you know, can we say something like, having to tend to cows outside. Well, that lets us know that we're on a farm. Does someone come in? Do they wipe their brow with sweat? That lets us know, hey, maybe we're in the summer. Maybe it's hot. Maybe the work is hard. Those types of exposition elements and doing it in a way that can be revealed through character is super helpful, and we want to get it in early into our play. And once we've established that stasis, once we've established that baseline with our expository elements, we can continue on with the play. All right. The next thing that we want to do after we've started and established ourselves with the expository elements, we really want to go with the inciting incident. That's the point of no return in the play. That's the action that happens on play that changes everything. Going with my bad example of a play taking place, well, I guess not a bad example because they made a whole musical about Oklahoma, but if we're on a farm or whatever, what happens when a car crashes into the side of the barn? That's the inciting incident. Everything afterwards is now changed. Our stasis, our commonplace, our baseline is forever changed now that inciting incident, that action that took place. And why am I underlying action? Because plays are about action, and I'll talk a little bit about it later, but plays are about action. They're moved by action, they're moved by characters. An inciting incident is not as impactful if we're just talking about it. If we're in a play and I say, hey, a truck just crashed into the side of the building, theatrically, that is not as exciting as seeing the truck crash into the side of the building or the aftermath of it, seeing like some type of someone bust into a room or something like that. We want to drive plays with action. That's the reason why it's on stage, okay? So let's just go back. Those two singular story points that we really want to talk about. Hey, Tony, I see you. That we really want to talk about are expository elements. That's how we set up the scene, character setting, time, information the audience needs to know. And then we want to follow that up sometime towards the beginning of the play with an inciting, I-N-C-I-T-I-N-G, inciting incident. Sometimes my southern slang gets in the middle of these words. And that's what happens, an action that happens that changes status quo and that the play can no longer happen the way it was thanks to that inciting incident. All right, cool. Thank you guys for joining. I appreciate you letting you know. This is Jamil Jude's Alliterative Attack to New Play Dramaturgy. Again, you're going to be fooled with alliteration, so I hope that you're excited about that as we talk about new plays. So let's now move to the cyclical components of a new play. That means, what are the elements of plays that want to reoccur? I know for those of you all who took any type of English literature course or anything like that in school, you heard about the plot mountain, right? Where we start with our introduction, and then there's a rising action, and there's a climax at the top, and then the resolution, and the falling action, and then a denouement at the end, right? Well, that can work. It is a story structure that is time in, time out, proven itself. I am more of a fan of something that is more cyclical that we'll talk about a little bit later. This theorist named Todorov, who had this idea of things happen in cycles. And that's what I want to suggest to you, that there's not just one rising action and one climax to the play. There can be multiple, right? All right. So with the cyclical components, what you really want to make sure you have is a crucial conflict. What is the action? Again, I'm underlying action. What's the action that shifts the balance and challenges the statuses of the characters? How is this different from the inciting incident? All right, so the inciting incident is, again, with our example, a truck crashes into the side of a barn on our field in Oklahoma, on our farm in Oklahoma. A crucial conflict that can happen are the two farmers disagree on the way to fix the barn, or out jumps an alien, out jumps an unwanted person out of the truck. Well, now we have our conflict, and we want to see that conflict play out in actions. Is someone deceitful? Does someone get slapped? Does someone go missing? Again, taken away from our initial example, we want to find something that happens. Again, on stage is better, although I know Shakespeare did a lot of stuff off stage. On stage is better. Can we see that crucial conflict play out, those crucial conflicts? Can we see them play out over the course and the action of the play? Because that drives us, all right? Once we have that crucial conflict, there's an opportunity for a reversal. Things have changed. Someone got slapped. Status quo has changed. Let's recognize that, and that's the reversal. The action undertaken by a character has now rebalanced the way we are. Once our farmer slaps the other farmer, They can't go back. They always, that's all, that slap is always going to happen. We've reversed the course of it. Something has changed. An action has taken place on stage that has changed status quo, and we can't go back. Again, this is different from the inciting incident, because the inciting incident, again, like we talked about, was the truck crashing into the side of the barn. Now, as we play moves on, we have a series of crucial conflicts that cause reversals to the status quo. Again, if you get lost, feel free to hit me up. Let me know what's happening if you have any questions in the comment section, all right? And I want to give a big shout out to Amina and a big shout out to Tracy Bonner for your donations. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you for supporting True Colors. All right, so once that reversal happens, now all the characters have to figure out, all right, the balance has changed. How do I move forward? We call that the reframe. That's okay, now let's take a look at what status quo is now. It's changed. The reversal has happened. The slap has happened. Now what's the ground? All right, I've just been slapped. let me get my balance. Let me get my bearings. Let me figure out how I want to move forward in the play. So the reframe is when characters are now trying to decide how they adjust to the new normal, to the new stasis, to where we have arrived. All right. The last thing, again, in the cyclical components, so these are things that are going to happen multiple times over the course of our play, is a resolution. Let's find how we move forward with this. Have the characters achieved, or have they been thwarted from gaining access or achieving their super objective? We'll talk a little bit about character in a second, so don't get lost in the terminology. I'll come back shortly to describe it, but I just want to understand these cyclical components. Again, that's the crucial conflict. We want to have conflict. Plays are driven by conflict. We want to have conflict that moves our plays. After that, once something happens, an action happens on stage, it reverses the course of stasis. It changes it. Characters acknowledging it is called the reframe, and then we move towards a resolution. Did the characters achieve or get thwarted from achieving their super objectives? So after we have exposition and we have an inciting incident, those singular points, over the course of our play, we will bring back a lot of those cyclical components, all right? Cool. So let's move and talk a little bit more about character, conflict. I want to break conflict down a little bit more, and I want to talk about central metaphor. And for me, and the reason why I leave central metaphor for the end is because I think central metaphor is so important, and I think that's what separates theater, especially live performance, from any other medium, is metaphor. It's art. It's why we're here. It's symbolism, right? But we'll talk about it. We'll break all that down in a little bit. Character. We, as live theater makers, are invested in character. We want to have an experience and share in the experience of seeing someone move from point A to point B. Character and action drive plays. A character drives a story by desire, by wanting something or needing something, wants and needs, by their wants and needs. The way they go about that in pursuit of their wants and needs, let's call their wants and needs their objectives, all right? So I want, in the example that we've been using about the truck and the farmers in Oklahoma, whatever, I don't know why I started down that route, but I've committed to it, I'm committing, here we are. If I want to fix my barn, that is my objective. Once the inciting incident happens and someone crashed my shit and someone broke into my barn, someone crashed their truck into my barn, my objective now becomes, if I'm the character in my own play, which is probably what I would write anyway, I want to go and fix it. That's my objective. As a character, I am going to go pursue that objective. Those are my tactics in pursuit of my objective. We want to see the actions that I undergo to fix the barn. Again, getting slapped by my co-farmer would present an obstacle that I have to now navigate this relationship, have to navigate being slapped while I just want to fix my barn. Say my chickens got out and now I got to go chase down my chickens. Now that's some more action that has thwarted me from achieving my super objective. Also, a character's personality is revealed through how they handle actions. Of course, we can talk about it. My co-farmer could call me all types of names, all types of different ways to tell you a little bit more about my character. But it is how I respond to what is being said about me is what's really going to reveal my character. So again, playwrights, as you are writing, yes, we want action. And yes, of course, it is a play. We want dialogue. We want conversation. We want characters talking. Actors want lines to say. But it is not just in what is said about the character or what the character says about themselves, but the true intent, the true characterization is going to be revealed by actions. And that is what keeps a play active. Action, active. You guys get it. I want you all to imbue your characters when you're thinking and you're sitting down and you're facing the blank page. Imbue your characters with the necessary qualities that will properly fuel their journey throughout the course of the play. What does that mean? Hey, make sure that you are giving your characters what they need to get to the play's conclusion. Now, they don't have to have it all at the beginning. That's the reason for a journey. That's the reason for a quest. They go and they encounter something. The Cowardly Lion gets a heart or whatever. I don't know, the Tin Man. Whatever they do, you know, y'all know the Oz story, the Wiz, or whatever. Those characters, but what they have and what we learn is that they have it all along. It was always inside of them. Do the same thing with your characters. Imbue your characters from the beginning to have the things that they need for their journey and that will get revealed through their actions over the course of the play. I'll try to say that one more time. Imbue your characters. When you sit down to write, start thinking about what your characters need to get to their journey. Now, it may not be revealed to them that they have it all. And also, as they go along their journey, they may encounter something that starts to mesh with what they already have that propels them for their journey. But again, your characters need actions. They can't just talk their way through a play. It'll be boring. They want to have actions. They want to come up against conflict. They want to move the story forward. Since I said conflict, let's move to that. All right, conflict. Why it is so critical in our critical composition concepts, and conflict being one of the major ones. Character, conflict being the second one. It is the friction that we need to propel the play forward. All right, characters who are uninhibited from achieving their objectives stay flat. When the inciting incident happens and someone crashes in, oh, shout out to my wife. Okay, Lolo, I see you, girl. Thanks for joining in. Okay, well, anyway, y'all, I'm just joking. When the inciting incident happens and our barn gets crashed in by the truck, if I'm able to immediately fix my barn, that's a pretty boring ass play, right? Like, something happened, I was able to fix it quickly, and we move on. That's a boring play. It doesn't really take much. If your characters aren't going up against something, then I think you're cheapening the human experience, because none of us in our course of our lives are achieving our objectives without any conflict. All right. So with that, that's how we move plays forward. Our characters have those wants, they have those needs, they'll have their objectives, and they go about it, and then they are thwarted, or it becomes more difficult. They have to navigate something. Make sure as you write your plays, as you're going through, you want to give your characters things to go up against, obstacles that they have to overcome. The conflict is what propels the play. We want our characters to have a story arc. We say it all the time. Arc. How does your character have an arc? That means they have to overcome something. They have to get from point A to point B. If it's a straight line, you know, in a metaphysical world, they don't ever move. But if there's a journey, if there's an arc, if they have to traverse some terrain to get there, we have something that's more interesting. Provide pitfalls and obstacles for your characters to navigate. I just want to make sure that I said that too. Again, we want to make sure that our characters are having things that they have to navigate to get us there. The last thing I want to say, and the reason why I'm saving it for the end. So in our critical composition concepts, I told you there'll be a lot of alliteration. I hope you're writing it down. And I have this as a handout, so I'm happy to share it. If you want this handout, please hit us up. DM us here at True Colors. I think you guys know my email. I say it all the time, but it's jjude@truecolorstheater.org. Find it on the website or whatever. Just reach out to me. I'll be happy to share this handout. It is not necessarily proprietary or anything like that. Just make sure you give credit where you got it from. But in our critical composition concepts, the things that we have to have in our play, character, conflict, and that last one is central metaphor. Central metaphor. I think it's so important. Let's talk about some plays at True Colors recently where we can talk about the central metaphor and why I think they're so important. With Schoolgirls or the African Mean Girls play, one of the central metaphors was that beauty contest, right? These girls were working themselves up so hard to fit into this beauty standard so that they can be noticed, so that they can feel like they were being accepted, acknowledged, or what have you. But what they were working towards, to not just be Miss Ghana, but to be Miss Global Universe pageant, at the end, they recognized that European standards of beauty were always going to win out. And it was that the women in the contest who looked more like European women, white women, were going to win. So at the end of the play, we see that these girls put themselves through so much conflict. So much of their character was revealed through the conflict that they all navigated through on their objective to win the Miss Global Universe pageant. In the end, to realize that it was rigged and fixed, and that women that looked like them, women of black women, weren't going to win this type of contest. The pageant was the metaphor of this ugly game of a world that doesn't prioritize blackness. In Paradise Blue, the central metaphor being Blue's solo, his song, his desire for a healing. Blue is spending a lot of time trying to get this song right. And everyone in the band is, and everyone in the play is kind of navigating around Blue and the demons that he's battling, this exorcism that he has to have, and this internal battle that he's playing. So he struggles with the trumpet throughout the course of the play. And then finally, once he's able to play the most beautiful note that he's ever made, and he's able to find that love supreme, and he's exorcised those demons to the point, the play ends with Pumpkin, spoiler alert, with Pumpkin taking his life, because just because those demons were out doesn't necessarily mean that he was still going to be a good person or that he was still going to benefit the community. So Pumpkin makes a decision. A central metaphor is the allegorical center of the play. It's the play's guiding force. The play will reach its conclusion when the promise of the metaphor is actualized. I want to say that again. The play will reach its conclusion when the promise of the metaphor is actualized. Another example could be that of Raisin in the Sun. And Lena Younger, Mama Younger, has that plant that she keeps on telling that plant that, you know, hey man, this space that we're in sucks a little bit, but you know, you're a scrawny little plant, but one day I'm gonna get you that sunshine, I'm gonna get you what you want. When she packs the plant at the end and takes it with her to their new house that the Youngers are going to inhabit in Clybourne Park, the play has reached its end because that metaphor of giving that plant the sunshine it needs to grow and a new space has been realized. All right, cool. I'm trying to think of other ones that are fairly obvious or what have you. King Headley is another one where the central metaphor being that cat. Stool Pigeon talks about Aunt Esther's cat at the beginning of the play. Aunt Esther has passed away. And Aunt Esther's cat has passed away. And they're going to bury this cat. But Stool Pigeon says, all that cat needs is a little blood on that grave and a cat will come back alive. So August has given us a little bit of a metaphor for us to follow, a little foreshadowing or what have you. At the end, spoiler alert, when King is shot, the blood from his neck spills on the grave. And as the lights are fading in an amazing production at True Colors in 2018, you hear the cat meow at the end. the promise of that metaphor has been realized, so the play has reached its conclusion. All right, let me just finish reading this out to you. The central metaphor is the allegorical center of the play. It is the play's guiding force. The play will reach its conclusion when the promise of the metaphor or metaphors is actualized. Now, a play can contain multitudes. We know that plays can be big, they can be epic, but get ready for this alliteration. A messy mixture of metaphors will plague a promising play. A messy mixture of metaphors will plague a promising play. Try to say that 5 times fast. So just be judicious, right? Don't put all the metaphors in there. Don't show us just how smart you are by having like water, and then water's a metaphor, and then like air is a metaphor, and then like a cat is a metaphor, and a barn is a metaphor for like our country or whatever. Like, keep that shit, keep it simple. Keep it as simple as you can, because we'll get lost. And then you'll have to tie up so many ends, because then the cat is going to have to get drowned inside the barn with the air on fire or whatever it is in order for us to really make sense of all the metaphors that you were sending. So really, you want to just kind of, you know, bring it back, reduce it, especially as you're getting started with your playwriting journey. Keep it simple, right? That KISS method. That's going to help the audience stay with you, okay? So let's just go back and review. Thanks to everybody for rocking with us. And again, thank you all for your donations to True Colors. So with this alliterative attack on new play dramaturgy, our plays want to contain a couple of things. One, our singular story points. We want to have our expository elements. And we want to get those in early in the play. What's the information that the audience needs in order to take this journey with us? The second thing is the inciting incident. What is the action that happens early enough in our play that changes status quo, that we can no longer move forward with how we were once this incident, once this action has happened, all right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be, it's separate from conflict, so let's not confuse us. The cyclical components, the things that will happen. We have the things that happen once, expository elements and inciting incidents, but the things that can happen multiple times over the course of our play are the crucial conflicts, reversal, when status quo has changed, the reframe, which allows our characters to understand how their world has changed and to renegotiate their tactics, and then finally the resolution, where they go from there, have they achieved what they set out to do, were they thwarted? And again, those things are very cyclical. It is not like your traditional plot mountain. It is all a cycle. And the last things that we want to mention, the things that are critical composition concepts, the things that I feel like if you're going to have a play on the live stage, you want to have in your play are character, conflict, and central metaphor. Characters and actions drive plays. Characters in pursuit of their wants and objectives undergo tactics, which are actions, in order to go get them. When they come up against obstacles, that is the conflict, and that helps propel our story forward. And conflicts are actions. They are best when their actions happen on stage. A play, in its allegorical, to reach its opportunity, you want to have a central metaphor, the allegorical center of the play. Keep them simple. Don't try to overburden the play with just how smart you are and how many metaphors you can put in there. But it allows us to, it helps us with the payoff at the end of the play. It pays off the journey, that when we see that metaphor come to fruition, that's how we see why we were there for a live experience or what have you. All right, y'all. So the last things that I want to say, I hope that you all are catching that. Again, if you want more information about that, feel free to email us, email me, jjude@truecolorstheater.org, or hit us up in the DM with your email address, and I'll try to get it out. We talked a little bit about that plot mountain, but I just want to again share Todorov's narrative theory, and it's very similar to mine. This is probably a lot better with the handout. You know what? We normally don't do this, but let's try this real quick. Bam. So there's the theory. I just want to share that with you guys. Again, this is all on the handout. But we start with that state of equilibrium. Again, that's that stasis that we talked about, that we've identified with the expository elements. And then a disruption of that order. again by an event. I'm calling that the inciting incident, but if we are at the beginning of the play, but with our cyclical elements, that could be any type of conflict. That recognition that the disorder has occurred is what we call that reversal in that reframe. Now, the attempt to repair the damage of that disruption, again, is where are characters moving forward now? How are they going to move forward now that they know that the ground has changed? Now that I've been slapped as my farmer, what do I do now? And then that final piece is a return or a restoration of the new equilibrium. That's me achieving my objective. If my objective is to get the farm back to having a barn and returning back to where I started, that's my pursuit. That's my new objective, and that's my new pursuit.
In tandem with one another, Todorov's narrative theory, the alliterative attack that I just mentioned, you know, hey, rules are meant to be broken. Everybody doesn't write the same. I have found both in my own writing when I spend more time as a playwright, but definitely in my directing, identifying those things really helped me in navigating any play, but specifically new plays. And it's also what I use when talking to playwrights about that. I refer back to this a lot. When working with playwrights, I really want to talk a lot about character. How are we revealing character? How are we showing true conflict over the course of the play? And then what is our metaphor, and how can we take advantage of it, and how can we ensure that we are maximizing the metaphor's benefit?
All right, y'all. Again, hey, if there are any questions, feel free to drop them. For those of you all who are tuning a little bit late, know that Ms. Pearl Clegg had an internet issue at home, so she wasn't able to join us, but we are going to reschedule her. It looks like June 11th is when she'll be back. Next week, we're going to have Maisha McQueen on the True Colors podcast, so I'm really looking forward to having Maisha there. You know, before I send it off, I just wanted to, you're welcome, Jazz. I wanted to kind of end this. I've been thinking a lot over the last several weeks or so about our upcoming season, which we've titled Joy and Pain, where we're really exploring what does it mean to be Black in America and to live with the ideas of joy and pain always at the ready. And it feels like we are constantly navigating those emotions. And it feels like on days like today or days like yesterday, as all of the news media is focused on the recent spate of trauma that's been inflicted on Black communities, that idea of joy and pain and living together simultaneously seems to be ever more present. I saw a meme yesterday that said being Black in America is having a really great day and then turning on the news and finding out that people that look like you were being traumatized over and over again. And that meme stuck with me, one, because it's so true, but it's exactly what we're talking about when we were talking about joy and pain. When we announced our play for the season, Rachel Lynette's Good Bad People, which is a story of a family that's having to deal with the aftermath of having the youngest sibling, a son, shot and killed by the police. I knew that the play was going to be relevant when we started identifying the playwright last summer. I didn't know it was going to be this relevant. I didn't know Ahmaud Arbery was going to be shot and killed by murderers and vigilantes. I didn't know the situation that was happening in Minneapolis was going to happen again. But I'm upset to know that I also knew that it wasn't, that I also knew that it was going to happen again. I knew that a man could be bird watching and enjoying a pastime in Central Park and to have somebody call the cops on him. I knew that was going to be possible. I just didn't know that
we were going to have more plays about it again. And, you know, I try to take my job real seriously as, you know, as an artistic director, as much as one could take seriously a job in where we play make-believe every day. But I really believe in the work that we do at True Colors and the fact that we strive to be at that intersection of artistic excellence and civic engagement. And it feels so imperative for us to try to use our platforms to try to fix it. Like, and I don't know what fix it looks like anymore. I know what talking about it looks like. I know what wanting to respond to a moment looks like. But I don't know what the fix is. And sometimes I feel fairly ridiculous for just trying to offer up something like that to talk about new play dramaturgy or something like that. But what I'm hoping is that through the work that we do at True Colors or what have you, the work that you all do as artists out in the world, that you inspire someone who does have the answers to make the change, that you inspire people to not be complacent. And that's whatever your racial background, whatever your ethnic background, it is a time when none of us can be complacent. It is not enough for us to lay the burden on the feet of other people to say, y'all fix it. Which I, hey, listen, I'll be one of the first person to say that, like, people wanted to endanger and kill people that look like me or my wife or my daughter. Like, that's not on me. Like, it's not me to fix. It's on y'all to fix. But what I can do is I can try to inspire the person who may be able to tell the story that may be able to help someone change their mind, or inspire the photographer who's going to take a snapshot of a picture of a riot, or like how the videographers who were capturing people spraying water hoses and sicking dogs on black people, black and brown people, black people in the South, all across the nation in the 60s. Like, I think that's what we do as artists. I think we try to inspire change. And I'm really looking forward to celebrating joy and navigating pain with you all next season as we look to that. I just, again, on a day like today, I'm thankful for the podcast. I'm thankful for an opportunity to just to talk story with you guys and to try to find a way for some collective healing and move forward so that when incidents like this happen, that we have things that we can go to, practices, moments that we can lean into collectively so that we can move forward bolder in hopes that we reduce them. But I'm sorry for rambling, y'all, but that has just been heavy on my heart. I was in Minneapolis. I lived in Minneapolis when Philando Castile was killed. And there were a couple other killings that happened on the north side involving police. So that third precinct that y'all see over in Minneapolis that's on the news right now, that's where a lot of the protests are happening. Like, I stood on that corner. I stood on that corner 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I protested and I yelled and I screamed and I marched in solidarity with people, and we held up signs, and black people in allies in the Twin Cities, they stopped the highways, I-94, and we felt like we were doing something, we were making some action. But to have this shit happen again just a couple years later, it's just like, how do we get back here, y'all? How is it that we're back here? Anyway, this is where I stopped the rant. I appreciate everybody who tuned in. Thank you guys so much for rocking with us at True Colors. We'll continue to do this every Thursday at 1 p.m. My guest next week, like I said, is Maisha McQueen. Sorry for those of you all who were hoping to see Pearl Clegg and not see me go on and do what I just did. But I do hope that the new play dramaturgy thoughts were helpful to you all. Again, hit me up via email or True Colors IG DM if you want that handout. Be happy to share it. Hope that you guys are, taking care of yourselves, finding what you need to do to stay healthy and sane through all this. And we'll be back next week with Maisha McQueen. You've seen her in East Texas Hot Links. You've seen her in Chasing Them Blues. Maybe it was Gut Bucket Blues. I think it was Chasing Them Blues. But you've seen her on stage here in Atlanta a couple different times, along with our TYA show, Shout Sing Out. So come back next week. And then we're going to try to get Proclay back on June 11th. So check us out there. All right, y'all. Thank you very, very much. Hope you all have an amazing rest of your Thursday. Chasing, thanks. Thanks, Leticia. Leticia always has my back. Leticia's the development director. You guys saw her on the True Colors podcast a couple of weeks ago. So thank you guys so very, very much. We will see you all next week. Have a good one. Be blessed.